Welcome to Eve's Apple, the podcast. I'm Kanyisa Boy, and today I wanted to talk about the lockdown. In South Africa, the lockdown started on the 26th of March, and it's just been a series of changes to a point where the president gave us different levels of the lockdown. As of the 26th, it was literally staying indoors, going out purely for essentials to flatten the curve so that we can ensure that there isn't drastic infection and also to kind of maintain a level of infection rate that was manageable. Then we moved to level four, and level four allowed for a bit of movement for us to also be able to get other services and other essential products that we may need in the home or whatever the needs were for all of us. And the two levels seemed semi-okay. Going into level five, we're all like, oh my God, what do you mean stay at home? And after 21 days of being at home, being without wine if you're a wine person, without beer if you're a beer person, seemed like such a tall order, because as unhealthy and unessential as alcohol is, some of us use it as a coping mechanism, you know, and of course maybe not the healthiest, but functionally we use alcohol as a coping mechanism, and suddenly there was no alcohol. And then in terms of the climate of the country, people were just struggling to get by, because entrepreneurs, especially those who are using their businesses to actually make ends meet and don't have savings and don't have money, is just straight chilling, waiting for emergencies, really, really struggled. Personally, I'm a freelancer, and this period has been really hard because of cancellation of contracts and work literally stopping, because my work is to stand in front of people or to be in the space where people are. And I suppose level five and four kind of forced us to think about what it looks like to work remotely, and to also pitch remote work to potential clients. But for people who sell fruits and vegetables, it was complex, and that's lobby groups, advocacy groups and organizations then pushed for those people to be able to go back to work under strict conditions, though, that they keep safe, that they wear the mask, that they've got sanitizers. So level five and level four kind of had those restrictions. But as soon as the president announced that the 1st of June is going to be level three, there seems to be a great amount of activity. Like, it doesn't even look like we're level four currently. And that had me shook. What also has me shook is the fact that children are going back to school, right? That's one. The second thing is that alcohol will now be available. And the third thing is that churches can now start operating. So that had me thinking, Gandhi, what was the reason behind the lockdown? Why did we go to the lockdown? Okay, to flatten the curves, great stuff. To get the health system ready to receive people who do fall ill. We saw quite a few corporate companies stepping up and making sure that these beds become available. So additional facilities for people who may fall ill. There's also discussions of if people do die, what kind of burial process needs to be embarked on in terms of just understanding the way that the virus behaves. And so, why am I having this podcast? What's happening? Firstly, in the first week, of the lockdown, there were 84,000 cases of gender-based violence that were reported. 84,000 cases. South Africa is gender-based violence central. And then I'm putting that loosely and commending the president for having the framework of how to fight gender-based violence and femicide, but we are nowhere near being over the hill with this. And people being locked down with their assailers, people who are being locked down with people who are homophobic, people who are transphobic, is really, really a scary place to be. So 84,000 cases were reported in the first week. And by its own admittance, the government spoke about gender-based violence being made worse by alcohol. So I'm imagining a scenario where alcohol is now available in these festering wounds where in a home people feel unsafe, and then you add alcohol there. And that's not to say that, you know, we need to obviously speak about personal responsibility, but I'm seriously concerned about toxic environments, and then you put a bit of alcohol there. So that's the first thing. The second thing is that you have alcohol and no curfew, right? So we have alcohol and no curfew anymore. So people can go and they can purchase. They're not allowed to sit in restaurants, which is important because then at least we are limiting infections and people infecting each other when they are happy to see each other and hugging and kissing in restaurants and in clubs. So that works. However, if you think about people purchasing alcohol and having no curfew, right, already it's problematic to be able to access alcohol because doctors in emergency and trauma units were speaking about how there's very few car accidents, there's very few violent crimes, so you don't have people, you have minimal people walking in with stab wounds and gunshot wounds. And we know alcohol aggravates violent behavior. So then in this instance, the beds that we have now got and now available for people who do get infected by corona, these beds are now going to be taken over by people who have drank alcohol and have ended up in unfortunate situations. Hey, well, so then my question is, what are we doing? We had level 5 and level 4 to get ready. And as soon as we're ready, we're adding another dimension. Because my thinking around level 3 is that, yeah, sure, open other services so that people can go back to work, so that people can start being functional, and they can start being able to sustain themselves in a safe and sort of monitored environment, and them obviously being encouraged to stay safe and limit infection. But adding the dimension of alcohol really, really has me shook. And I mean, I'm not saying that people are completely irresponsible, but I'm saying, going by what we know about this here country and our relationship with alcohol, it's not a good idea. All right, I'm gonna park my alcohol rant and then I'm gonna move on to the next one. Why are children going back to school? What is the reason? Okay, firstly, when I spoke to Luvo in the previous episode, we're speaking about the lack of infrastructure when it comes to children being able to access online learning. That's clear. We're also speaking about the need for parents to be supported while children are learning at home. That's clear. We understand that a majority of South Africans cannot afford to learn online. That is clear. So essentially, the fear of losing out on a school year is clear and it's completely understandable, right? So as of the 1st of June, The tricks in grade 11s are going back to school. My concern here is, if grown folk are struggling with masks, if grown folk are struggling with making sure that they sanitize, how do we allow children to go back to school? Right, and you must remember, most South Africans take public transportation, right? So already that's exposure number one. And number two, children don't teach themselves, so the teachers now need to be present. That's exposure number two. And we don't know whether or not the children are coming from homes where, I mean, there's been employees of the public health system that are said to be infected, private health system that have been said to be infected, that work in grocery, that work in factories, that work in retail, that are said to be infected. And because the virus doesn't show itself sometimes for the first 2 weeks, we don't know if those children are not infected, right? And if you think about the schooling system, children move in mounds, guys. Like, we used to sit in crews, yo. So if we sit in crews and we haven't seen each other in a while and we're hugging, wear mask, yeah, sanitize, sure. But we're there, hugging. Oh my God, I haven't seen you in forever. And it's nice because it's been a while, right? And we're saying children must take greater responsibility, whereas parliamentarians are not able to go back to work. Why? What is the reason? Because being in a space together when you don't know whether or not people have been exposed is tricky, right? So you might say, oh, what am I saying? Should just there be no economic activity? What I'm saying is, right now is not safe, and I don't know when it's safe. And the scary thing here is that even though there's some research, we're uncertain about the behavior of the virus, right? Lost on metal, maybe because it's cold, maybe not so great in places that are warm. We don't know. Do we want to try, or is it intentional? Right? Is it intentional so that we see a peak? And we see whether or not we are in fact ready. Must remember, Nev, there's the dimension of the alcohol. So it really is risky. Please, then take me to the next one. Oh, Gosiam. Church. I hope you guys are also having your coffees, because I'm having my coffee. Church. Church is opening. Laying of hands. You know. Of course, the people need spiritual support. You know, we are heavily burdened. If you look at the world right now, if you look at America specifically right now, and how the Black community is struggling, the world literally is turning. It's scary what's out there. And so we all need psychosocial support. We need to feel like we are part of a whole. And so church obviously is like at the center of this. However, why are we not preparing ourselves to do this online? You know, how are we not preparing ourselves to do this online? People already started. And I see as well that there are some churches who have said no thank you. The Methodist Church has said no thank you. The Zionist Church, Yohanyan, has said no thank you. ZCC said no thank you. They're not starting services. And a friend of mine was telling me about they saw people worshipping together, and they were scattered in the street, social distancing, but like praying together. I suppose that is a distinct possibility. I'm just concerned again about the level of discipline that people can exercise, especially when it's so emotive, and also people haven't seen each other in such a long time, and so that support is needed. But human beings by nature also want to touch and feel each other, and in a space where people are that vulnerable spiritually, they want to literally be bending together. So how do we ensure that the kids from the school, the people who have been drinking alcohol, the people who work in retail, the people who work in hospitals, and a myriad of other people who may have been infected, don't take it at church. We don't know. You know, if we're saying don't gather, why are we saying this particular group of people should be able to gather? Is there no way that we can start looking at options of how to psychosocially support each other and spiritually support each other without needing to be in one place? I mean, I suppose these are conversations we obviously have to have, because similar to the school scenario, we need to figure out in an under-resourced country, what does it mean to continue to learn? What does it mean to continue to church? Right? And then brings me to the next thing. I mean, people haven't seen each other in a while. So people, a lot of companies are opening. We have to make the grand assumption that they too already, in terms of office design, to socially distance. Oh my goodness, yes. So we have to assume that they too already to socially distance in offices. And working conditions can really be tricky. So just like the church and the school thing, I am hell of a nervous. What I'm thinking about, though, is people who'd been quarantined with their families, because South Africa has a history of migrant labor. A lot of people, when the shutdown was declared, decided to go to their, for lack of a better word, their homelands. So people from Gauteng went to the Eastern Cape, went to Limpopo, went to the Northern Cape, whatever the case may be. KZN people went, you know, different people from different provinces literally moved, right? To be at home for the duration of the lockdown. And now that work is now, the lots of places, corporate places, public spaces are now opening to start working again. Now those people need to move from those provinces back to work. And you know, miss, the virus doesn't move unless we do. And I'm afraid of the spike. Again, I'm concerned, not afraid. Afraid is too deep. I'm concerned about the spike. I'm concerned that for the most part, the spike affects people who are dependent on public service for health access, right? And I'm concerned that though the public services, it's ready to receive people, it's compounding itself with additional layers. And this is not me saying people mustn't go back to work. This is just me saying we maybe are getting to a point where we are pushed to figure out how to work better and how to work remotely. We're at that crossroad. South Africa has been punting for IR for like a year and a half now, and we are confronted with what we have been seeing. Fourth Industrial Revolution, when we are struggling with third, which is being able to work online, has me shook. All right. And it's challenging all of us, civil society, parents, schooling system, government, to get ready, infrastructure readiness. And infrastructure readiness even means accessibility. So this thing of having data cost you 1 million in this country is really ridiculous. And it's marginalizing. And the marginalized people continue being marginalized. We see it everywhere in the world. And I'm sorry that I keep using America as a reference. Like right now, you have people who are being killed having to march during coronavirus. And we already know that the health system is not ready to receive the people should they fall ill. Same here, you know. And this is not to say that the health department is not doing the best that they can. This is not saying that civil society is not working their butts off to create awareness. But what it is that it's not tailored to give people who absolutely needed access. because resource-wise, it's resource intensive. And it's not saying like during corona, people, during the coronavirus, people are not falling ill, you know? People are still falling ill. In fact, the number one killer in South Africa as it stands is TB, which is terrible because what we know about corona is that the symptoms are infect the lungs, you know, you have issues, respiratory issues. Can I say that I'm shook again, you know? TB, number one killer. Current novel coronavirus attacks the respiratory system. Send the children to school. Send the people to church. Send the people back to work. People who have not seen their lovers in 2 months are going to want to go see their lovers. There's no curfew. People are going to want to chill together and have a drink or two. So I'm shook about level three. I think you can hear that. And I'm shook, I really believe, for solid reasons. And I'm afraid that we are at a point where we're saying, literally, let the ones with the best immune systems win. And I really hope that if there are people who have contracted the virus, they're being as safe as possible. And if you know that you've been exposed and you think you've been exposed, to tread very carefully. And that's so, I suppose that's the best that we can do. And if you've got access to multivitamins, to immune boosters, ensure that you take those, because at this stage, as of tomorrow, those long lines to get the majuals are going to be long. And as it stands, it's month end, which has me shook as well. So people will be going out to buy groceries as well. And I'm concerned about just what that scenario is going to look like. So this podcast is literally to shine the light, in simple terms, on the politics, on the class, on the gender issues that we find ourselves in. And I really think that my rant about what this scenario looks like literally points at the class factor. You know, if you can't go online and purchase things, if you can't go online buy education, if you can't go online to worship, if you can't work online because of issues of cost or issues of infrastructure, then you are wholly exposed to the novel coronavirus. And that really has me shook. Anyway, so we're going to just be safe. That's all I can say. And I'm saying that so loosely because I don't necessarily know what complete safety looks like. Sanitize, wash those hands, put on that mask. If you know that you're wearing a reusable mask, wash the mask so that you do not walk around with a dirty mask that exposes you not only to corona but to other stuff. And as far as possible, please stay at home, you guys. You don't have to go buy alcohol on the 1st of June. You could wait, or you could buy it online if you've got access. This has been Eve's Apple, the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Stay at home, stay safe. As of next week, Sunday, we start a series called Love, Sex and Magic, and we explore these concepts in their fullness. I do hold live sessions every Wednesday at 7 p.m. My Instagram handle is at Being an Apple. Being an Apple is my Instagram handle. And on that platform as well, we are exploring love, sex, and magic. What you're thinking and beyond is what we'll be exploring. Thank you so much for listening. I'm dropping another episode 8 a.m. on Sunday, South African time. Be sure to have a listen. Mm-hmm.